Welcome to the KMUD Holiday Weekend News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this Memorial Day weekend broadcast. On this episode, we have coverage of Shelter Cove's Improvement District, this week's sports report, and later, a story on the War Powers vote in Congress. But first, some local updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off, the City of Arcata has a proclamation.
Proclamation in honor of the kinetic sculpture racing, and the recipient in person is our Rutabaga Queen, Lucy Lips.
Oh,
okay.
I am not Lucy Lips.
I apologize.
This is absolutely okay. I am...
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Lucy Lips is getting well-needed rest before this weekend. So I am here to proclaim for Lucy Lips. My name is Gustav Wattlesworth. I am the reigning Rutabaga Queen for 2026. Please do not bow. Thank you. But you may applaud. Thank you. Thank you. I am just a silly little circus goose, and I'm here to proclaim the proclamation. As always, Kinetics is this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and I am honking excited. So, if I may get a For the Glory... Let us try that one more time. Are you ready? Are you ready? Thank you. For the glory!
For the glory!
Oh, thank you very much. I hope to see you all this weekend.
All right. So my love, we're doing it in reverse, but of course, as kinetics works, we don't need to play by the rules, and that's okay. But if you would like, I am going to read this glorious proclamation for you.
Proclamation.
Yes. Okay, so this is a proclamation in honor of kinetic sculpture racing. May 23rd, 2026 is the kickoff. Whereas, and it starts with a royal, whereas, the art and sport of kinetic sculpture racing, difficult to truly comprehend, but easy to enjoy, is a humble tradition with at least one kinetic race starting on the Arcata Plaza for the last 50 years, not counting those 2 years when we were thwarted by a global pandemic. And whereas... The Kinetic Universe, the Kinetic Grand Championships nonprofit organizing body works to promote the tradition and values of kinetic sculpture racing in Humboldt County and spread the good word that kinetics is for everyone. And whereas several other cities across the world have kinetic sculpture races inspired by Humboldt County's mother race unusually held every Memorial Day weekend, recognizing that this art event involves the whole family, community, and while also promoting tourism, sustainability, bicycling, and silliness. The race enhances our community's image, both nationally and internationally. So now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the City Council of the City of Arcata hereby congratulates Kinetic Universe on its glorious and dedicated stewardship of the unique Humboldt tradition of kinetic sculpture racing. The Council encourages everyone to attend the kickoff of the 2026 Grand Championship this coming Saturday, May 23rd, 2026, on the Arcata Plaza at the sound of the forgotten and beloved noon whistle. For the glory!
For the glory! Yay!
The Kinetic World Championship will be all 3 days of this long Memorial Day weekend. You can find out more information on their website, kineticgrandchampionship.com. The Kinetic is one of Humboldt County's most unique and well-loved traditions. An update from the Humboldt County Elections Office. The Humboldt County Office of Elections would like to share that the ballots discovered earlier this month inside a locked drop box from the November 4th, 2025, statewide special election will be counted. Under Election Code 17302, ballots from the November 4th statewide special election must be destroyed 6 months after the election was certified. However, the County of Humboldt secured the uncounted ballots and filed a petition with the Humboldt County Superior Court, requesting to count the ballots and recertify the election. The court made the determination to grant the county's petition. Any changes in count due to the 596 newly counted ballots will not impact the outcome of the election. A programming note for Monday, May 25th. we will be airing public affairs content instead of our usual newscast. And now, to our main stories. This is KMUD News. Shelter Cove Resort Improvement District Manager Christopher Christensen provided updates on their proposed Measure A tax increase and new sports courts coming online, KMUD News reports. Shelter Cove's Resort Improvement District has been in the news of late for a proposed $60 tax increase for property owners that will help the district deal with a consistent budget shortfall. The tax is up to Shelter Cove voters on June 2nd. But regardless of whether that passes, there are new projects spearheaded by the district that are ongoing. We listened in to yesterday's May 21st Shelter Cove Improvement District board meeting, where District General Manager Christopher Christensen gave updates on new sports courts for residents and visitors, along with his thoughts on public reaction to the proposed Measure A tax increase. We'll begin with Christopher's comments on soon-to-be-open sports courts.
Okay, sports court update. Since the last board meeting, BDM Construction completed the parking area with painted lines, wheel stops, and ADA signage and surface material. In fact, the final county inspection for that, those improvements are happening today. North Coast Fencing installed perimeter fencing and gates. BDM Construction also installed two basketball poles and moved the Prop 68 sign onto the fence. We put some other signage on there too, including rules signage. Staff ordered and received the court paint and moved the aluminum bleachers from the existing pickleball court's location on Upper Pacific Drive next to the court. This was a request from the Shelter Cove Pickleball Club with permission from the bleachers owner, Scott. Next steps are to apply the court paint, but as I can report, happily, volunteers completed that task last weekend and yesterday. Shelter Cove Pickleball Club volunteers, I want to name them Kurt Odra, Bruce Christie, Wendy Ball, Steve Soderquist, I'm sure I have his last name correct, but he was out there too, and they were all painting the lines with really hard work. Wendy, Sunny, Wendy Ball also, as I mentioned. So, yeah, they were all out there. Big thanks to them, really helps out, and the end product looks really great. Did a really great job. And I've also coordinated with Six Rivers Portable Toilets to change the airport parking area portable toilet to an ADA accessible one and move it next to the court in that southwest corner. That will happen next week. And the latest talk is sort of a ribbon cutting grand opening celebration. The club would like to see, they've reached out to Supervisor Michelle Bushnell, and they'd like to see it potentially on Saturday, June 6th, be sort of a ceremonial ribbon-cutting ceremony. So.
Shelter Cove Improvement District General Manager Christopher Christensen then spoke on the lead-up to the Measure A election on June 2nd.
We're down to the wire on this one. Since the last board meeting, the ballot measure with Measure A has been mailed to all registered voters in the district. I responded to interviews by Lost Coast Outpost and gave my news about the measure. More yes and a signs have cropped up in the community. And I've actually been asked for more, but we're out now. But we're down to only about 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks until the voting ends. So staff and the board also held a special town hall style meeting April 30th to inform the public on the measure and answer any questions. Visit Lost Coast posted a supportive piece online, so very grateful for that. And the voting is scheduled to end on Tuesday, June 2nd. If the measure passes, the additional charge will appear on property tax statements beginning the very next fiscal year, 26-27. So it will be an immediate revenue source if it does pass.
Shelter Cove's Measure A tax increase will be decided during the California primary election on June 2nd. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. In what was a very busy week in local sports, Ray Hamill brings us details of which schools won this year's Charles Lakin baseball and softball tournaments, as well as all the latest news from this week's NCS playoffs, news of who made the 2026 Cal Poly Humboldt Hall of Fame class, who were the big winners at this year's Husky ESPYs, and more.
An unlikely team has been crowned Charles Lakin Tournament champions in softball after a memorable run through the postseason tournament last week, while it was a familiar tale in the race for the Lakin Baseball Championship. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on both Lakin champs in just a moment as we take a look back at all of the big stories of what has been a very busy week in local sports, including how the HDNL teams have been faring in this week's North Coast Section playoffs in baseball and softball, news of how one local high school athlete is succeeding on and off the field of competition, how the local athletes fared at the weekend NCS Track and Field Championships, news of a new Cal Poly Humboldt Athletics Hall of Fame class, how the Fortuna Huskies celebrated their senior athletes, why it will be a big weekend for local motorsports, and where one local state champion is taking his talents after graduation next month. But first up, the Eureka Loggers are the 2026 Charles Lakin Softball Tournament champions after an unlikely run through last week's HDN postseason tournament. After placing fourth in the Big Five, the Eureka girls did not even qualify for this year's tournament, but they were included at the last minute, taking the place of Del Norte, which was unable to compete because of school-required activities for the Del Norte players. And once they qualified, the Loggers took full advantage of their opportunity. Eureka opened with a come-from-behind win over Hoopa before beating McKinleyville 6-4 to reach the championship game and then taking care of business with a 14-7 win over Fortuna in Friday night's championship game. The tournament title is the fourth all-time for the Loggers. In the Lakin baseball tournament, the McKinleyville Panthers continued to roll. The Big Five champions faced off against Eureka for the third straight year in Friday's final, and they would beat the Loggers for the third straight year to claim the coveted trophy once again. The Panthers started fast and scored four runs in the bottom of the first inning to take a lead they would not relinquish on the way to a 5-1 victory. The tournament win secured a second Big Five and Lakin Championship double in 3 years for the smallest school in the Big Five. Both the Eureka girls and McKinleyville boys would then turn their attention to this week's NCS postseason, with the brackets and seeds released on Sunday and the action getting underway on Tuesday. A total of 12 local teams made the postseason, including four who received a number one seed in their brackets. In baseball, McKinleyville was seeded number one in the Division II tournament and opened with a hard-fought 2-1 win over California on Wednesday. That victory sets up a quarterfinal showdown against Bishop O'Dowd at McKinleyville High School on Saturday afternoon at 1. The St. Bernard's boys also received a top seed in the Division IV bracket and a first-round bye. The Crusaders will begin their playoff campaign at home against Pinole Valley on Saturday afternoon, with first pitch set for 2 p.m. No other HDNL baseball teams remain alive in the postseason after a disappointing couple of days for the league teams. Eureka, Ferndale, Del Norte and South Fork all qualified for the playoffs, but all four schools fell at the first hurdle. Eureka received the number 15 seed in Division 2 and lost 11-1 at Northgate, while in Division 4, Del Norte was seeded number 12 and fell 4-3 at Newark Memorial. Ferndale was seeded number 4 in Division 5 and lost 7-3 at St. Patrick St. Vincent, and South Fork was seeded number 12 in Division 6 and fell 4-2 at College Prep. The HDNL teams, however, have fared better in the NCS softball playoffs, with five of the six league teams included still in contention for a section crown, including three who received a first-round bye. The Hoopa girls were seeded number 9 in Division 5 and lost their opener 11-10 at San Domenico on Tuesday to end their season. Also on Tuesday, Del Norte opened against Ukiah, and the number 4 seeds in the Division 4 bracket won comfortably 8-0. The South Fork girls also won their playoff opener as the number 4 seeds in Division 5, beating Kennedy 10-3 in Miranda on Wednesday evening. The playoff action continues this weekend, with all five league softball teams still playing in action and all five hosting their quarterfinals. In Division 3 action, top seed McKinleyville plays Petaluma and number 2 seed Fortuna opens against Freedom. In Division 5, Eureka opens against San Domenico, while Del Norte will try to keep rolling against Annalee, as will the South Fork Dunmore girls when they take on Moreau Catholic in Miranda on Saturday afternoon at 1. Switching gears, it was a good week for Ferndale senior Tinley Pidgeon. The three-sport standout received a prestigious accolade when she was named the NCS Female Scholar Athlete of the Year, beating out girls from 175 section schools for the award. Pidgeon, who is a 10-time All-League honoree in soccer, basketball and softball combined, received a certificate and a scholarship for $1,500. She is the only girl in the NCS to receive the award. In local high school track and field, meanwhile, the best athletes from the HDNL travelled for the opening round NCS meets last weekend, and it was a good day for several local standouts. At the Class A Championships at Montgomery High School in Santa Rosa, which featured the small schools from around the section, six HDN athletes claimed top three finishes in their events, including St. Bernard's Colton Hall, who won the boys' discus, and Ferndale's Anthony Casso, who placed first in the boys' 110-metre hurdles. Fortuna's Addison Burgess and Arcata's Skylar Collenberg each also won individual events at the Redwood Empire meet at Santa Rosa JC. Burgess placed first in the girls' triple jump and Collenberg won the boys' shot put. The best athletes from around the NCS will compete at the Section Meet of Champions at Dublin High School this weekend. Switching gears, this week Cal Poly Humboldt announced its 2026 Hall of Fame class, which will include the 2011 football team and the 1996 women's soccer team, along with seven individuals, including longtime athletics secretary Sue Simon. The Fortuna Huskies, meanwhile, celebrated the achievements of their senior athletes at their annual Husky ESPYs, which were held last week. Isabel Sanchez and Kavi Bolden were among the big winners on the night when they were named Female and Male Athletes of the Year. Sanchez also received the award for Best Female Individual Performance. In local motorsports, this will be a big weekend here on the North Coast with the season opening event at the Redwood Acres Raceway on Saturday. Gates open at 3:30 p.m. with the racing starting at 5. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, Arcata senior Nathaniel Stiles, who played a key role on the offensive line on Arcata's 2024 state championship winning team, has announced he will play for College of the Redwoods after graduation next month. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
With an in-depth story on what happened this week with the United States Congress's delay of a war powers vote, here's KPFA's Lauren Schmidt.
In another delay in efforts to end the war in Iran, Republican House leadership pulled the war powers resolution vote for a second day in a row, amid growing concerns in the party that the measure could pass due to GOP defections and absences. Democrats, however, had packed the floor prepared to vote, unaware the measure had been pulled, until an inquiry from Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern.
Mr. Speaker, can you explain to the members of the chamber what is happening with the Iran War Powers resolution that was scheduled to be voted on this evening?
The gentleman have a parliamentary question.
That is my parliamentary inquiry. I just want to know what has happened with the Iran War Powers resolution.
The gentleman may consult with your leadership regarding scheduling.
Randy Weber, serving as Speaker pro tem, delivered the response that led Democrats to erupt on the floor.
Mr. Speaker, further parliamentary inquiry. Are we not voting on it because the American people are sick and tired of this illegal war that is costing tens of billions of dollars? Gas prices are through the roof. People can't afford their groceries. Is that why you're pulling it? You guys don't have the guts or the balls.
The House will be in order. This House will be in order. The chair is prepared to move on to the next question.
Today marks the second delay of the vote by Republican leadership in the House. The move comes 2 days after the Senate advanced its version of the War Powers Resolution in a 50-47 vote that reflected growing Republican support for the measure. The resolution advanced due to 4 Republican crossover votes and 3 Republican absences, leading it to pass despite John Fetterman being the only Democrat to vote no. Tuesday's vote marked the 8th attempt by the Senate to pass the resolution. Today would have marked the House's fourth attempt after its last vote ended in a tie, with Republicans Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania and Tom Barrett of Michigan breaking ranks to join Democrats. The resolution sponsor, Gregory Meeks, says he believes there are enough Republican votes to pass the measure that would attempt to limit Donald Trump's ability to continue U.S. military involvement abroad without congressional approval. Meeks shared this plea.
We have not held one single public hearing, not one witness, not 1 hour of testimony on a war that has cost the American people tens of billions of dollars. Congress cannot abandon its constitutional responsibility over matters of war and peace and reduce itself. We should not be reducing ourselves to be a rubber stamp. And that's why we must vote yes.
This week's developments signal a shift in Republican support for continued U.S. involvement in the war, particularly among conservatives, who argued their support was limited to the 60-day window outlined in the 1973 War Powers Resolution. Under the law, Congress can require a president to end military involvement in conflicts not authorized by Congress after 60 days, unless lawmakers approve an extension or formally declare war. A deadline more than a month overdue. KPFA News spoke with North Bay Congressman Jared Huffman, who believes that once the bill reaches the House floor, it could pass.
We're right on the cusp, and we're going to keep pushing these votes and demanding them because it's a privileged resolution under the War Powers Act, so they have to let it come to a vote. And a number of us have, you know, just introduced a sort of a pipeline of these resolutions to make sure that we'll have a chance every single week until this happens.
Congressman Huffman, we are now more than 80 days into the U.S.-Israel war in Iran, and while there has been limited public information and congressional oversight, some details have emerged through the Pentagon's fiscal year 2027 budget hearings. What are your big takeaways, especially as the Pentagon is requesting roughly a 42% increase over last year's budget?
Right. And this is the part where as much as they think they can avoid Congress and because of this inept Republican majority, they've been able to avoid congressional approval for over 2 months, but they can't do that forever for this reason. They need money. And this is why they have to come and get a vote of Congress that will either give them the money or say no. So I am looking forward to that. That will be an opportunity for some accountability and some tough answers. But there's an alarming number of my Republican colleagues ready to just write a blank check for hundreds of billions of dollars for this open-ended quagmire. I don't think you'll see very many, if any, Democrats going along with that.
There's actually been concerns among Republicans that portions of the military budget could be acquired through reconciliation. In addition to that, there is another reconciliation proposal to fund ICE and Trump's ballroom project, which critics say is an effort to sidestep Congress. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a way to sidestep the filibuster in the Senate, basically. That's what, when we talk about reconciliation, what that really is a bill that is supposed to be about the budget, about expenditures and revenues, which is sort of a unique carve-out to the Senate's 60-vote requirement for everything else that's just policy. So, yeah, it's conceivable that they could add this into the budget reconciliation that they're trying to push through the Senate, which right now is focused on ICE and Homeland Security, and they're trying to fund these agencies for multiple years without any guardrails or accountability. Democrats are not supporting that, except for, you know, maybe one in the Senate. But they've got a tough road, both with the Senate parliamentarian and just with the politics of things like the ballroom, which is starting to unravel. And Donald Trump's not making himself any friends in the Senate as he endorses against John Cornyn, for example. So it's not hard to imagine them falling short of any reconciliation package, let alone one that now would be bloated with $200 billion or so for a war that no one knows why we're fighting or how the heck we're going to get out of.
Going back to the War Powers vote, Marco Rubio has made his views on Cuba very clear, and CNN is reporting increased U.S. military surveillance flights near Cuba that appear similar to aerial patterns seen before U.S. operations in Venezuela and prior to the attacks in Iran. Do you have any insight into whether the United States may be preparing for another military operation, this time in Cuba?
No insights or inside information, Lauren, but a terrible sinking feeling that that's exactly where we're heading because, you know, they have said the quiet part out loud after, you know, they were spiking the football and doing all their victory laps on Maduro. All of them were saying Cuba's next. So we should believe them. And that is just a very daunting thing to think about. I don't know what it would mean militarily. I just know that I don't think the American people want to see us running around the world just taking over countries and abducting foreign leaders. It's crazy. It's unthinkable.
As a result of the war, your district is now seeing some of the highest gas prices in California, a state that already has the highest fuel prices in the nation. At the same time, oil has begun flowing again through a pipeline shutdown after the devastating 2015 oil spill along the Santa Barbara coast. What does restarting that pipeline mean for California environmental protections, and how is California's congressional delegation continuing to respond?
So this is this situation in Santa Barbara. It's the Sable Corporation's pipeline, which, as you mentioned, has a terrible safety record, has spilled. It's been shut down by the state of California because it's in state waters. But this is one of several instances in which the Trump administration is using this emergency authority called the Defense Production Act. And they use other authorities, emergency authorities as well. And they're claiming that the war in Iran that they started has created an energy crisis and a national security emergency that requires them to basically shut down all environmental law compliance and to take this extraordinary step of ordering a company to restart and operate a pipeline that has been shut down by a state court. So these are wildly controversial moves. They did it in the Gulf of Mexico with what you may have heard about the God Squad, where they suspended all Endangered Species Act compliance for whales and turtles and anything else involving oil and gas drilling. So now the ESA no longer applies to the oil and gas industry in the Gulf of Mexico and until a court rules otherwise. And now they're testing that same extension of fake emergency authority on the California coast, where they're trying to, with this pipeline, kind of create a test case for this emergency authority. And if it works, you know, it's being fought right now in court, of course, but if it works, that's how they intend to order a massive expansion of offshore drilling up and down the coast.
Capitol Hill is now in a Memorial Day recess, and the next attempt at a War Powers resolution is expected after lawmakers return in June. But the question remains, if Congress does pass a War Powers resolution, will they be able to enforce it? For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Frederico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Ray Hamill. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.